Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. We're going to be talking sports for the next 90 minutes. Sit back, relax, and be entertained. I know people are really going through it with this virus going around globally, but hopefully we can entertain you and keep your mind off it for a few minutes. How you doing there, Ice Water?
Good. You better get you a drink now. Ha-ha! It's time,
yeah,
man. They done cut my internet off every damn thing. You ain't going to hold me down.
Oh,
you can't keep a good brother down. Where the cognac?
Oh, my goodness.
Rayon cognac.
Yeah, man, it's getting tight here in Chicago. Yeah, they closed the clubs, and I guess they were going to try to keep it open as long as people, 50 people weren't in the same place at the same time, more than 50. But over the weekend, it was pre-St. Patrick's Day, and they folks went buck wild, man, like there was no tomorrow. And the governor was like, okay, since you're going to act like that, we're going to close them down so we can stop the spread. Because and I can see why he did it, because it's not enough beds for everybody if everybody gets sick. And so there are not enough testing kits and things of that sort. So you know, I got to give credit to the Illinois governor for really kind of looking out, because you can't trust 45 and what he says and what that administration is doing. So you can trust the doctors and and kudos to all the medical workers out there, doctors and nurses, the EMTs and all that, who are on the front line doing their thing. So kudos to them. But, yeah, they're shutting a lot of things in Chicago down, the schools, businesses. You can go to eating establishments, but you can only get drive-through or curb pickup. You have to order before you go there. Supermarkets are open. I still don't know the deal is about the toilet tissue, but that's another show. But you said they're shutting it down in Ohio too, huh?
Man, let me tell you, our governor, Mike DeWine in Ohio, he was the first one to come out the box. Shutting down everything. He would think he was the first. We were the first state to shut down the schools. Then he tried to shut down the Arnold Classic, Arnold Sports Festival, which is huge here, about 250,000 people, before it was really diagnosed strongly. And came out recently, and he was saying that the restaurants and the clubs, restaurants are closed. The other thing, too, that they just announced, I think they put out that the hair salons and barbershops are closed now as of 3 o'clock today. Yeah.
Wow.
And here where I live in the city, they have the mayor has declared it a state of emergency.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, because it's Ohio State University there. So,
Yeah. So,
wow.
Not the schools are closed.
Just shut down.
Kids go home.
Yeah, it shut down our sports, man. And like I said in the first 40, I said I finally realized that I'm a sports addict, and I it's almost like I can't function, man. I'm at night looking for some kind of sport, and I can't. I'm like you, bro, because you said watching the reruns of sports, it doesn't work for me. If I know who's gonna win before, I'm not dedicating more time to a game I already saw. Or I may do that in boxing because I forget about some of the fights, just to get entertained about boxing or some fighting. But as far as basketball, football, if I already know who won, it ain't fun watching it anymore. And I don't have the I used to have the Classic Sports Network. I don't know if ESPN still has it. I used to love watching that, especially on Christmas when they show all the Muhammad Ali fights. And I do have DVDs of Muhammad Ali that I'll probably go through. But, man, I find myself going through Xbox saying, okay, I think I'm going to do a whole season, pick a team and go through, the whole a multi-number of seasons, just to start it all over again with the basketball, football, soccer. I have some other games, too. But just to, occupy my time, working out, things of that sort. What else you doing, bro?
Man, like I said, I've been binge watching TV shows, man.
yeah, me too.
I used to like Chicago Fire. I never saw that. I saw the police department, PD, but I didn't know that it started with that one. So I've been watching that. What else? The series All American. I caught up on that a little bit. And other than that, man, doing a little side hustle work. Music, bro. I love music. So I'm into my music, doing that. And just other than that, just trying to get my mind right. Because, see, the sports thing, I've been doing this for so long. I miss it, but I don't. I know it's coming back.
Okay.
And I think people just need to kind of put yourself in a good place, do something, spend time with people that you love, relax, work out, and just realize that why it is bad, this is not, as we know it, it's not the end of the world right now. So, and your life is what you make it. I believe that all the time. We're so privy and some of us are so blessed and so spoiled that when we have setbacks or things that we can't do what we want to do normally, then it's such a shock. And perhaps you should just be thankful what you have right now in your life and the fact that you're healthy. The other thing, too, is while you have this time on your hands, why not reach out to some people you ain't talked to in a while? If everybody at home and they're not working, reconnect with your people.
Right.
So that's how I look at it, man. I mean, I thought about it the first couple of days I heard about it, and I was like, man, but then I'm like, you know what? You ain't taking my joy, bro. So I'm still going to be on here clowning. So set your tape, cassette tape in or whatever you got to do to record this and get ready to hear it again and pass the Courvoisier and the Rayon Cognac and orange juice and let's get going.
Now, this is an idea I threw around. I forgot to talk about it on the first 40. I get my best ideas in the shower. And last week I was like, man, what are we going to talk about? And I was in the shower. I'm like, man, we can come up with our own kind of simulated March Madness. And I know you sent the brackets on who might be in the tournament, but I'm thinking that maybe, if we want to do that, we could do that for the weeks up until Championship Monday. And it'll probably be a 2-3, majority rules, who we think is going to win in each game, each bracket, things of that sort. and kind of explaining why we think one team will upset a team or move on or survive in advance, things of that sort. So I'm just throwing that out there. I know I threw it out there last week, but that might be something that we could work on and kind of keep ourselves entertained with sports and not let the season go just as a bust. Because to be honest with you, the NBA I really didn't care for. It didn't really bother me. But when they hit March Madness, that's when I was curled up in a ball on the floor like, oh, God.
What
is he going to do?
Damn,
curled up. Because I was like, oh, this is what we've been talking all season about how crazy this tournament was going to be, because what we were seeing throughout the season, nobody was really kind of the big dog in college basketball, and we were like, man, just anticipating what was going to happen was like getting me geeked and excited to see this season. And I understand, you know, I have no bad feelings for, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I would say err on the side of safety than just taking a chance and disasters happen. But it was like, okay, NBA, whatever. You know, I'm not watching that until later in the year anyway, towards the playoffs. But when they said NCAA, I thought they were going to postpone it for a month. They said it's canceled. I'm like, oh, no, this can't be happening. And then I kind of drunk the Kool-Aid when you and Black last week were saying, oh, no, it's not going to be canceled. They ain't going to turn away all that money. And I'm like, yeah, they might be right. They're not going
to. They weren't. You thought they were the last. They were the last one.
They were holding
out. Last one.
Yeah, they were holding out.
Yeah.
They were
holding
out.
They were talking about
even
trying to put together a 16-team tournament.
Yes. Yeah, they were holding out. And, yeah. But we'll get to that in a few. But, yeah, I remember last week, like it was yesterday, that, this can't be happening. But as soon as the NBA did it, and when Gobert went down, and then Donovan went down, and then the NBA, we were on the air last week, and you said they suspended the season. I'm like, no, play with me. The very next day, and I talked about it in the first 40, is that, you know, when the ACC tournament, when Florida State and Clemson, congratulations to Florida State winning the season championship, but when they said, hey, we're not going to have this game, I was reading that North Carolina State and Duke didn't even show up. They were like, we're not sending our players there. That's it. We're not doing it. And I think that was a domino effect of stopping all the other conference tournaments that were all set to go, saying, you know, we can't send the students because we don't know what's going on. And I think it's a fear of the unknown. But, again, you caution on the side of safety. But when did it just really hit you, man?
The day that they announced it. The day that they said it wasn't happening, I think it was like, when did they announce it? Was that like that Thursday, Friday, right at that point?
Yeah.
When they just said they're thinking about it, and then it's like, we just, and the way they said it was like, we just canceled the tournament. I was like, oh! Oh! Everybody was screaming, oh! Oh! That we got a funeral. Oh! But,
yeah.
It hit there, and then once Rudy Gobert tested positive, I kind of knew it was a wrap, because they knew at that point that the athletes were vulnerable and they could not afford to take that chance. And it was just, it was at that point, it was sad. And I was like, oh, man, what the hell? I was like, first I was like, they're not going to do it. And then at that point, they said that they had no choice but to do it for the safety reasons. But, yeah, it was tough because I really was looking forward to this tournament. I really was. And I was like, man, this is going to be it. I cannot wait. And it was sad. And I know they were the last ones to give in, even after the NBA, because they really wanted the tournament. So I feel sorry for the teams and the athletes, both young men and young women. But it was needed. As much as I would love to see that happen, I did not want to see them risk their health. and right. I mean, I'm a sport and I enjoy the games and whatnot, but I would like, I would rather see them healthy than I want to see them play games. And if otherwise, if you don't want them to be healthy, then that says to me that you're being selfish. I love basketball. I love football. I love watching these things. I love watching the athletes compete on all levels. But just to say now, I want to risk their health so I can be happy and watch the games and cheer or whatever it may be, that's selfish. So, you know, sometimes we all need to take a break, need to chill out, and get your mind right. Start teaching your kids something instead of coming in late, not seeing your kids. Now we remove those excuses. I'm not talking to anybody because I don't know anybody. I'm just saying, and I know y'all might say I'm crazy as hell, I'm good with that, but I'm just saying, cherish what you have and enjoy it. So we can still talk sports, though, because we got a lot of football that NFL doesn't stop. It don't stop.
NFL did not stop. They stay in the cycle.
Yeah, they don't stop. To me, that was refreshing, just to see all these moves and then to see some college football players committing. I mean, shoot, that's like somebody giving a piece of bread to a hungry man after 5 days of no food.
Before we get to the NFL, I'd like to send shouts out to Mark Cuban, Zion Williamson, and all the players and organizations who said, you know what, since the workers at the stadium aren't going to be out there working and making their money, we will step up and we will give them money so that they won't lose in this season. I thought that was a great, great gesture. So shouts out to everybody who's doing that because, I do some bartending work, things of that sort, and there are a lot of folks who do that, who that's their livelihood, the tips and all that other stuff. And some of my bartending friends work at the different stadiums here in Chicago, whether it's music events or sports events or things of that sort. So kudos to the organizations who are stepping up and saying, you know what, we don't want this to be a total loss. We know you're going to be losing out. Here's some cash to get you over and be safe and be healthy. But let's move on to the NFL, man. The NFL never comes out of the news cycle. they seem to be in the news cycle all the time. You have Brady going. What's interesting with this, Ice, all these players who are moving, is not set in stone yet. They made agreements, but it's not set in stone yet. And it's partly because of the new CBA where you have to before you sign the contract, you got to go through a physical. And so you got to get that done. And then you can finalize the contract after everything is cool with the physical and everything else, the paperwork. But Tom Brady, I did not anticipate going. I really didn't anticipate him leaving the Patriots. But since it's happened, I see why they did it. I don't understand why you would pay a 43-year-old player. But Tampa Bay is trying to make moves right now and think that Tom Brady is the guy to help them do that. I don't know what's going to happen to Jameis Winston, whether a team wants to pick him up with those 30 interceptions last year, 30 touchdowns. I don't think teams want to pick him up. Brissett, they're talking about New England trying to pick up Brissett from the Colts because Rivers stepped in. And I think Rivers, I'm not sure about Rivers going to the Colts and whether that's going to be the next step for them. Moving up in that AFC, you have Bridgewater go to Carolina. Don't know what's in the future for Cam Newton. You have Nick Foles who's going to the Bears with Graham and Quinn, the outside linebacker, and Graham the tight end. So they're trying to make some moves. I think that's curtains for Trubisky because if you're asking me who I think should start, Trubisky or Foles, I got to give it to Foles because he is the guy that has a proven winner and a Super Bowl champion and can run that offense and has worked with Nagy before, so he knows exactly what Nagy's looking for in that offense. You got Breeze who signed a 2-year extension. I thought it was just going to be one more year, but he signed a 2-year extension. You have Minnesota giving Kirk Cousins an extension on his contract. Why they're doing that, I don't know. But talk about some of the moves that you've noticed that may be surprising to you. And what should people kind of be looking forward to with these free agents in the NFL?
Yeah, well, first of all, too, I think one thing we really talk about, maybe I missed it, is the fact that the collective bargaining agreement was passed. I think we talked about that. And I told you all they needed was 51%.
Yeah.
It passed by only like 60 votes.
Right.
It shows you that those certain individuals need their money on the lower end. So it was all systems go. But some of these moves were just amazing. You look from the standpoint you mentioned about Tampa. Tampa Bay right now is they're right in the mix. People are going to want to see them. I'm sure they're going to have they're going to sell out in that regard. But they have a pretty good team because you look at it from that standpoint. You have Chris Godwin, wide receiver. Of course, you have Evans on the other side. And then you go into – you still have tight end O.J. Howard. You have Ronald Jones at running back. And another tight end, you also have – I'm not sure if Cameron Brate came back, but they got to talk to Cameron Brate is back. Then you're going to see some things happen there, too. Thought Cleveland did well. They picked up offensive lineman and Jack Conlin. And also they picked up Austin Hooper from the tight end from Atlanta. But with that being said, their new coach, Kevin Stefanski, likes to run double tight ends like he did up in up the way in Minnesota, double tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to help Cleveland a lot. But Tampa Bay jumped into it. People say what they want to. You have a solid coach who is known for helping older quarterbacks and quarterbacks get back on point. And if you're Tom Brady, it's hard not to jump on that train because those guys are going to want to make plays for him. And there's rumors that he might ask them to see if they can bring in Antonio Brown. That might just be a big old rumor to be talking. But I think people are going to kind of try to flock to Tampa Bay to try to play. So I think that's interesting there. And I'm still puzzled by the fact that Houston Texans traded DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona. I don't get that. For the damaged goods and Johnson, as David Johnson, as a running back who struggled, you get rid of him, and you still have Kenny Stills over there and DeAndre Carter. But I don't understand how that worked out. You still have Darren Fields and Will Fuller as well. But when you look at that standpoint of DeAndre Hopkins is 20-something years old, is in the prime of his career, and because you have a disagreement with him or whatever, then you just get rid of him. And I don't understand that. And now you just open the door for Kyler Murray to do some great things. You got a young running back still in Kenyon Drake over there. If Fitzgerald comes back, then they'll work with that too. But Kenyon Drake was with Miami before and playing real well. And now you just open the door for this young quarterback to get excited. And you're giving some guys to play around with. And it just blows your mind again because of the factor that DeAndre Hopkins is 27 years old. 27 years old. You just kind of gave him away with that being said. Crazy. Also, too, Baltimore Ravens, even though Ozzie Newsome is no longer there as the general manager, they still found ways to get it done silently. They picked up Calais Campbell. All they had to do was give up a fifth-round pick. And he's going to really help them to get stronger in another place where they need to be. And then they are loaded at tight end and let one of their younger tight ends go on Hayden Hurst. He goes to Atlanta to replace Hooper. And they ended up grabbing a second-round pick for Hurst. So, as they said, it sounds like the risk get richer. And what else can you say, too, about Tennessee? Picking up Vic Beasley, who's last year defensive end, had 8 sacks, did some great things. And the fact that Tennessee also re-signed or grabbed Tannehill at quarterback and then Henry. So it's all systems go. I do want to see what Carolina does with Teddy Bridgewater. They have still a lot of weapons over there, Curtis Samuel, McCaffrey, some other folks over there, and they're younger. They get out of the – they have a new coach, young coach, younger coach, and you get out of the old guard of the way things were for them. And so the question you have to ask yourself now is, what is Teddy – this is Teddy Bridgewater's opportunity now. He's been talking about he wish he had opportunity to show what he's capable of. Instead of playing for five games, he had a nice little come up or a check, if you will. But now you have some ball players. So you have that. You got Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore over there, Christian McCaffrey, as we said earlier. And the door is wide open. Last but not least, I don't understand how Indianapolis, they're going all in. I don't see how you pick up Phillip Rivers. I don't.
Yeah, that, I think that was a bonehead trade.
I think he's older. I mean, you do that. The other thing, too, real quick, is the Chicago Bears, man. I know you went out and got Nick Foles, and that's all well and good, and they improved themselves on defense. But you have to get better on offense. You have to provide more weapons. Colin Robinson, the second, was very good. Anthony Miller did real well. Tariq Cohen did okay. But you had to provide more weapons for whoever plays quarterback on that team. You just do. Cordell Patterson is a better running back slash punt returner than he ever will be a wide receiver. They have got to improve that. If they don't, I think it's going to be the same type of situation that they struggle with now. Not only that, they went out and spent money, gave a ridiculous contract to Jimmy Graham, who hasn't been the same in years, because if he was, he'd still be playing for more of a playoff contender.
Yeah, because he was with Seattle for a minute. He was with New Orleans. I think he was with the Green Bay Packers, if I'm not mistaken. And it just seems like he's bouncing from team to team to team. And, you know, the Bears always wanted a decent tight end based on what they do in their offense. But I don't think Jimmy Graham is that guy. But I think Nick Foles will start. I think he will start. One of the things that you said that made me think of why the Texans made the move, maybe this is a copycat league. Maybe they saw what Tennessee was doing with the heavy running and then the quarterback kind of just being serviceable. And I kind of see that in Carolina too with Cam. To me, Cam never made really good he didn't make good decisions all the time as a quarterback. And throws he should have made, plays he should have hit that were open. And Bridgewater seems like he can make better decisions. He has McCaffrey back there, so it's not all on him. He has some weapons at wide receiver and tight end. So I can see where Carolina is going with that. They need a serviceable quarterback who make great decisions and who's going to take care of the ball. Cam wasn't necessarily that type of player, even though and maybe Carolina kind of figured out that Cam's not fully recovered from his foot, and they didn't want to spend any more money, with Cam. And we talked about in the first 40 some of Cam's antics. And so maybe they're saying, you know what, you know, we've kind of sat in there with you, but now here, you have permission to go out there. And I'm not sure what team is going to come after Cam. I know a friend of mine here in Chicago was saying, oh, he should come to Chicago. And I'm like, I don't think Cam's the quarterback for you in Chicago, to be perfectly honest. I don't think Bridgewater wanted to come here because it's too cold. It's too cold in Chicago. And so Bridgewater is a quarterback that played in Minnesota, of course. They play in a dome. So he didn't have to play in the cold in the Minnesota cold. But I think it might work out for Bridgewater. We should see it. And I'm really kind of, you know, listening to some of the folks, the talking heads on the sports stations earlier today, and they were talking about how Tampa's the team to beat in the NFC. And I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. You're overriding San Francisco. You're overriding New Orleans. You're overriding Green Bay. You're overriding the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, Tom Brady is a great quarterback, but that's just because he's on your team doesn't give you a ticket to the Super Bowl. There are a lot of things that have to come in to effect for him to get there. I don't know, and people are going to get on me for saying this. I don't know if he can cheat as much as he cheated.
Oh, Lord.
New England. Because, man, that's what people are talking about. They want to get praises to Tom Brady and Belichick. That was the best cheating combination in football because they got away with a lot of stuff, bro. And I ain't taking nothing away from them winning. But, man, with Deflategate, with, you know, filming teams and all that stuff, they should, one of them should write a book after their career is over, like, and they should have the same title O.J. Simpson had it. If I had done it, this is how I would have done it.
Oh, God.
They should do that. But don't give him tickets to the Tampa Bay Super Bowl because the Super Bowl is going to be played in Tampa Bay the next Super Bowl. So maybe that they'll get a home game. But don't give him the tickets yet. They may not get there. I'm not really sold on Tampa Bay's offensive line because you saw what was happening with Jameis Winston. And Jameis Winston is a little bit faster. I don't know who's faster. I'd like to see a race between Tom Brady and Jameis Winston because Jameis sometimes is back there running for his life or trying to get away or trying to throw the ball away, and that would explain the 30 interceptions, to get out of trouble or get from preventing himself from getting hit. But it's going to be very interesting. Teams that you haven't been hearing for who might be getting slim pickings in the free agency is Green Bay, Denver, because Green Bay needs some studs. Denver needs some players. Oakland, you have no idea what they're doing, but they grabbed your boy from Dallas. I thought he was going to go back in the broadcasting booth. Maybe he spooks from the broadcasting booth, but they grabbed the tight end. They got Mariota, who's going to be a backup. And this is, I think, Gruden's fault because he won't commit to Carr, and that's why there's so much apprehension of the quarterback situation. He should just say, this is my quarterback, and this is who I'm riding with. Let's build the team. But he won't do that, and that's why folks are like, is he going to trade Carr? Is he going to cut him? All this other stuff. So they have no idea what they're doing. So there's those notable teams. Any other notable teams who have not been making moves that should be making moves in free agency?
You look and you think Denver would make more moves, but maybe they're sitting where they are, sitting good. I know that I think they released the quarterback, escaped me, from Baltimore. Can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. They released him. I didn't hear that.
Right. So they released him. So, but teams like that, I think a team that has made moves and they're kind of quiet, and I think they might surprise you, and that team is Miami. Miami made some moves, and this is going to actually improve them. From that standpoint, that people are going to be excited about it if they can turn it around. Because last year, they won a few games that a lot of people were surprised by. And, you know, when they beat New England that time, and a lot of people thought it was a fluke, even including myself. But I think that they really showed you that, hey, we are, we're a team. We can make some moves, and we can do some great things. And I think if you add some more pieces to them, you kind of go out there and get that done because that's what I saw. And I know that I think they signed the running back Howard. Used to be with Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Signed him to a deal. And a few other players. I think they signed a couple of former Dallas Cowboys as well. So, on the defensive end. And I think with the right situation that they could make some noise. Because I think they believe that they have a decent team. And I think, too, that they say to themselves, we have a shot now that Tom Brady's gone. And I think that's what a lot of people are pointing to. A lot of people are pointing to, wow, Tom Brady's no longer here. It's wide open. We can do some things. So it will be.
I think
that's the. Go ahead.
No, I think New England got this all planned. Belichick, I think he got this all planned out. on what quarterback is going to be there with the New England Patriots. I think he's already anticipated this. I think he's been laying in a cut. Like, once this happens, once this shoe drops, this is what we're going to do. Whether it's Statham or whether it's Kelsey or whether they pick up another quarterback, the Brissett from the Colts, who knows their system, I think they already got a plan set where, okay, we're not going to be as bad as people think we're going to be. And you may see, like, during the season where they said, you know what, the Patriots haven't really kind of missed a beat without Tom Brady. So I think he already has it set. What I saw him do last year was that defense was on point. The New England defense was on point. And I think they ran out of gas at the end of the season. But that offense just sputtered. It sputtered really, really bad. Tom Brady didn't look the same. And he was getting hit a lot. That offensive line could not protect him. He was getting hit a lot. And that's what makes me wonder if that's going to happen in Tampa Bay. Because they don't put an offensive line behind Tom Brady. You can have all the receivers you want. You don't put an offensive line behind Tom Brady, it's not going to happen. Because during the season last year, I don't know if you remember, but they were saying how Tom Brady wasn't throwing touchdown passes.
Right.
They were scoring and beating teams, and they were, you know, leading the AFC. But it wasn't like the New England Patriots you saw in the past that were scoring a lot of points and Tom Brady was throwing the ball everywhere. That was not happening. And so I know Black alluded to that maybe Belichick set it up that way where, you know, to make Tom Brady look bad to get away from him. But it wasn't a coincidence that they picked up Jarrett Statham last year in the fourth round pick. And maybe Tom Brady saw the writing on the wall saying, you know, they're planning to get rid of me because I can't see him playing until 45. Maybe he could, but he's 43 years old. To give him a 2-year contract, you're trying to win right now. You're trying to pull a Peyton Manning and when he got picked up by Denver and trying to win right now. But I just think the Patriots are just a smart organization, even though they can cheat. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But I think they're a smart enough organization to go, okay, we'll lose him. Maybe Andy Dalton will come in, Jacoby Brissett. Maybe I can't see them picking up Cam Newton. I'd be surprised. And I can't see them picking up Jameis Winston. I'd be surprised they picked up those two. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, my only thing about New England, I think we're so accustomed to them making moves and it working. You understand what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. they've been so successful. They've made moves and, like, man, they got it right again. There might come a time where they don't get it right. Maybe they do. Maybe right. they're not as successful. I mean, you got to look at their roster. Guys that really made Tom Brady and he made them, Julian Edelman is going to become mm-hmm. a different player. You have Mohamed Sanu, who was hurt, really wasn't able to do anything. They were so hurt at wide receiver. They had James White playing wide receiver, and they went to was it Nikhil Harry, a young man that barely saw the field at all. He became the primary target for Tom Brady. So while I understand what you're saying, and it could happen that way, that Brady's just getting older and they don't have the line, but I also think that part of the reason why he went to Tampa, because he talked to Bruce Arians to go, look, we're going to work on putting this – we have a decent offensive line. We're not as great as something that you had up in New England. We have these weapons, and we're going to get better. And I think that that's what he really wanted to do because any other situation was tough. You don't want to go to – you can't go to Chicago. They don't have any weapons. You didn't want to go to San Francisco because it didn't make sense. You didn't want to go to the Chargers. But he knows with this coach in Tampa – he has an idea what it's like to coach older quarterbacks, and he knows how to win. And he has guys that are desperate to – you imagine Mike Evans now catching balls, footballs from one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. That does not motivate him, get him pumped up. All I'm saying is I'm not so sure New England gets it right. Before, as you said, as the late Denny Green would say, before I crown them, I need to see him.
Oh,
before I crown him. You want to crown him? Crown him then. But before I crown him, I think they need to show me with another move or two, and they need to show me on the field that they're worthy of what we've always been accustomed to, them being good or great. And it's a no-brainer. We say about Tom Brady the same way. There's a lot of unknowns. A lot of unknowns. A lot of people criticize Tom Brady for going there. But that's what makes it fun, though, doesn't it? That's what makes
it
fun.
People
make choices, and when it doesn't work, people go, damn, I can't believe that. That was so stupid. But until they strap up the chin straps, get on the field, strap up the cleats, we won't know. But the beautiful thing is we have a long time to decipher. We have a long time to conversate and rationalize what we think is going to happen. And that, my friends, why you're jonesing for sports and what makes sports great.
Yeah, I want to ask this, before you answer, I'm going to go to break. Eli Apple going to the Raiders, I want to hear what you think about that. Diggs going to the Buffalo Bills, I want to hear that. We're going to take a break and come back right here on the Goose Squad Sports Radio Podcast.
You know, we're dealing with a very critical and crucial time. Most crucial and critical time that I've ever witnessed. Being as young as I am, you know. We all don't want to say nothing else, so we say as young as we are. Now, I want to talk about the pronunciation and the realization. Now, the educators, they call it ESP, positive thinking, right? Some of the people on the cross the other side of the pond call it vibration, astrology, and all those different things, you understand? But I call what it is what it is. What it is and what it is. Look at him. Now you see, a brother, you take in the ghetto, you find a whole lot of crime. I can understand, hey, I know what it means. Being 9 years old before I got my first pair on the way out of a store. You know, putting on a half-pressed suit.
Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. Man, James is talking, boy. James is talking
to
himself right there, boy.
JBE experience, huh? Dude, I love that cat, man. He was so real. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
What it is what it is. Hey, got his first pair of underwear. He was 9. And we complained about being in the house. Stop it.
I'm trying to tell you.
Stop it.
Stop with liquor and food.
All right, before we went to the break and got a reality check from Soul Brother number one, James Brown, Eli Apple, man, what do you think about that move and Diggs going to the Buffalo Bills?
Well, I don't know. I think Eli Apple, considering what the situation was when he was, what happened in New York, I think it was a nice landing spot for him with the Saints. But I don't think that he was performing the way that they thought he should. And I think he kind of knew his time was up there. He was kind of getting exposed because you had Gary and Conley there. You had some other guys doing some things. He didn't play horribly there, but when you know things are changing around, then I think he probably looked for another way, another place he could escape, and he would be appreciated. And with that being said, he ran out to with the Raiders. And you know how that goes with them. They treat you well. You're going to Las Vegas. and goes a long way. So I think he kind of saw the writing on the wall, brand new situation, and he'll probably give him at least 2 years to get himself together. So with that being said, I think that's what he did, and he will. I think he'll do all right out there, and not a lot is expected from the Raiders. Sometimes we know that, so he might have fell right where he needed to be. So I think he also, if I'm not mistaken, they traded him. No, I was thinking about something else, but yeah, I think he'll do all right out there. I think that he'll do okay, but he could get exposed out there. Because I think that's why he ended up leaving, and or they let him go out with New Orleans. So anyway, but in your next one was Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
Not surprising, because we heard a lot of scuttlebutt about him and not having a great relationship with Minnesota, having some issues there. And him not receiving the ball, and he had some issues with that. Then later in the season last year, they kind of, I don't know if they kind of gave him a, I don't know if it was a threat or if it was a warning. They needed to get himself together. And the last few games, he started to play well, and they started to throw him the ball, so he started to perform. So that may have been an audition to show that he's still good as a player and not damaged goods, if you will. So Minnesota was able to move him. And I stated earlier that they traded him to Buffalo, who is desperate for wide receivers to help their young quarterback, Allen, even more. And I think if he wants to be, Stephon Diggs is a great place to be. And he can really showcase his skills along with John Brown and some other guys. And they need more playmakers. So much that Buffalo was willing to give up a first-round pick to Minnesota, which is perfect for them because they didn't want him anymore anyway. So Stephon Diggs had an opportunity to go out there and make plays along with John Brown, and just opens the door for Buffalo. Shows you that they have a "we want to win right now" mentality. So kudos to him for that. And now guys are just going to have to step up, because I think what we're running into is they're sending out this money, they're giving out money to free agents and different people like that. But as sooner or later, you're going to have to earn your money. And the big stars talked about the CBA. Point comes down to people want their money. That's why I think you saw so much movement now. Yeah, and there's some top-notch guys, but then you saw some of the regular guys moving forward to go, we signed this deal, give me my money.
Well, it should be interesting. The NFL, like I said, stays in a news cycle. But we're going to switch. We're going to talk some NCAA basketball. But before I go to the final rankings that they put out, Kansas is number one. Iona College. I had to look up where Iona was, and Iona is in New Rochelle, New York. And Rick Pitino, their coach, Tim Clues, resigned, and then due to health reasons. And then Rick Pitino picked up the job, and it's in New York. So I think, like I said, when he was released from Louisville, and I think they settled, I didn't think it was going to be too long before he got a coaching job somewhere. This may be a stepping stone, but Rick Pitino is back in college basketball. The season's over. But he's still back in college basketball. What are your thoughts about that, man?
I think it had to be a win-win for everyone involved. I say that. I think it had to be a win-win. So when you think about Iona, they want to win, and they're desperate to win. And Rick Pitino, in the right scenario, can get them there. And the other thing, too, there are a lot of things people don't know, is I believe that his son is very close in proximity to where Iona is. Toby Keith's two sons. And I think it's also, it was mentioned that where Rick Pitino was living is not that far away either. So it's win-win. So it's like he gets to go home and he's around his family and they have money. And it's like, why don't you do this? And he's like, you know what? Why the heck not? So he doesn't have to really go anywhere. I think he's close in proximity to his family and his house. And if you can still coach and be home, why not? Why not? So he took a chance, and they're desperate because they want to win. And, hey, and we know how America, we are here, love America, Americans. We always like to see the underdog come out from the ashes and win again. And if that's the case, we should be the Phoenix. Anyway, but I think that he wants to rise from the ashes, and it'll be another feel-good story for a couple years, and then they'll move on. But I understand it. I'm just surprised that he I'm not sure if they still had it in basketball, but he didn't have a – how long was this show cause situation? You know, where usually they have a long time where they – when a guy's out like that, where he can't be, if he does come back to basketball, then it's the probation is placed on the team for a while or school, and it can last for quite some time. But I have not heard anything about that.
And maybe they haven't said anything like you said.
Well, yeah. What do I know? And here's the thing, and I'll get off this very quickly. The one thing Pitino said is, he deserved to be fired from Louisville. He said that. So he's kind of laying his tracks to kind of go, yeah, I messed up. I could have done better. And laying the groundwork to go, I'm sorry. And just let me come.
Well, he was responsible. It was under his watch, so he's responsible. That's what
right,
I got
that,
from what he said. So
right,
I didn't know what was happening, but it's
it.
Under my watch. I'll take the blame for it.
So for him to say that, it's a lot. Before was fighting it, so now he's laying down the, you know, he's laying down the sword, so he can coach again. He's a slick dude, man.
I did not have sex with that woman. But anyway,
Ms.
let's
Lewis.
Go through the top 25.
And he said, "If I did, hey, I wasn't the first one. They just didn't have cameras."
Let's go down the top 25 of college basketball. The season has ended. Kansas turns out to be the number one team, followed by Gonzaga. Dayton holds on to that number three spot. Florida State jumped up to three slots to the number four, followed by Baylor that dropped down to one. San Diego State dropped down to one. Creighton bumped up four. Number seven, Kentucky dropped two slots. Michigan State, that was like I said last week, before we knew the tournament was canceled, I was falling in love with Michigan State all over again. They bumped up seven spots to get to the number nine spot. Remember, they were ranked in the top four in the beginning of the season, followed by Duke, who jumped up two spots, Villanova, Maryland, who was dropping, Oregon was staying steady, BYU was on the come up. Louisville was dropping, and they were dropping fast, drops five spots to the number 15 spot, along with Seton Hall. That was a team that I fell in love with early on in the season, but they've been having a tough go of it in the last few games. They dropped eight slots down to number 16. Virginia was back on the rise. Wisconsin was back on the rise at number 18. Ohio State got back in the top 25. They're at 19. Auburn was dropping off a little bit. On the flip side, Illinois jumped up two slots in the number 21 slot. West Virginia was coming up and coming fast. They jumped number eight slots in the number 22 ranking. Houston was teetering in that 20-25 ranking. They are at 22. Butler jumped in the top 25. And Iowa, they were kind of being bruised up towards the end of the season. Held on to that number 25 slot. And I saw Providence kind of stepping up. A lot of other teams are stepping up, like Penn State, Utah State, St. Mary's, things of that sort. Would have been a fun tournament, but it was a tournament that never happened, and we don't have a national championship. Your thoughts on the top 25, man?
Yeah, well, I look at the top 25, but I'm going to go a step further because I think about what would happen if they did have a tournament because we looked at those brackets. They were talking about putting Dayton as the number one seed in the East. And their biggest foes out there probably would have been Villanova. They would have had Maryland out there and Duke. And it might have come down to Dayton and Duke. And the question you have to ask yourself is, was Dayton good enough to beat Duke this year? And the question might be yes. And you look at the Midwest, and you had Kansas as probably the number one seed. And they probably would have to face Kentucky, Virginia, Creighton's out there. And Kansas would probably end up playing somebody like Creighton and Kansas, and then Louisville probably would have been over there too. But whether or not Louisville would have made it through is one thing. But I think that's how you look at that too, out that Midwest. And then you look out West, which is why you would love this, because the way they were talking it, they were predicting that Gonzaga would have been the number one seed. You would have teams like Marquette out West. West Virginia would have been out West, like maybe a 6 seed. San Diego State perhaps would have been the 2 seed. Florida would have been the 10 seed. And Michigan State would have been the 3 seed, which means Michigan State probably would have ran into San Diego State. And then Michigan State would have played either Gonzaga or Oregon. But that really puts them in a great position because of the fact that they're not the number one seed. And we also know that usually when you think about going out West, the West is a little bit softer in the competition compared to the teams that Michigan State played and as they were making their rally cry. So this would have been a perfect scenario for Michigan State to try to get out of the Sweet 16 to the 8 and to the 4 by being out West. And last but not least, you look down at the Southern region where Baylor probably would have been the number one team. Then you had teams like Auburn, Wisconsin, Michigan, Seton Hall. Providence would have made it in, perhaps Florida State. And then from there, you kind of say who makes it out, maybe a Florida State, Seton Hall matchup, or Wisconsin and Baylor. And then I think whoever can come out of that Seton Hall, Florida State area probably would have gave Butler all that they wanted Baylor all they wanted because the way that they played in the sides. And I think the way that Baylor had issues with Kansas, they were up and down. That might have been an issue for them with the size of it. We know as long as they can make it's not the Final Four or the 8 to go to the 4, then Florida State usually can give you a nice little run. And I think Seton Hall could have possibly done damage too. So those are the way I look at it. I saw a few things there, right, that had Dayton winning it all. And I'm from Dayton again. And cool. I know I'm catching hell, but I don't see them having enough size to win it all or enough inside toughness. I like Tobin, Obi Tobin, really well. He's a hell of a player, but I think collectively they would need more. And I think a team, like they would ever face a team like Michigan State, they would have had their hands full because the way that they were able to play up and down and, you know, they get hot. So the other thing, too, is whoever in the tournament, the team is hot at the end is the one that they roll. So it's not so much that some teams are just athletically better and talented than others, but if a team gets on a roll after the conference tournament or during that time where they can run off 6 straight games, that's the team you really want to watch. Because those are the teams that can ride a team we'll call better than them. But I think it would have been a hell of a ride. I'm sad I missed it. Because I just thought it was going to be, you were going to be laughing one day and crying the next. It would have been full of so much drama that I think it would have been one of the best tournaments we've had in quite some time. And I daggone it, I was looking forward to it.
Yeah. These are the matchups, the way they have the brackets set up on CBS and Bracketology. These were the matchups that would have been very interesting. And you know some of the lower seeds could have had a chance to upset some of the higher seeds. I would have loved, because Belmont had a senior laden team. Belmont, who was a 15 seed against Creighton, number two. I would have loved to see the Utah State team up against Michigan. Utah State was they came in as a 10th seed, with Michigan coming in at a 7th seed. I would have loved to see Illinois and Cincinnati. Illinois had a 6th seed. Cincinnati had 11th seed. That would have been interesting. The game I would have loved to watch is Wisconsin, which is the number 5 seed, against Tennessee State, which is number 12 seed. Florida and Arizona State would have been an interesting game. That's in the Midwest. In the East, I would have loved to see Oklahoma versus St. Mary's. St. Mary's is an 8 seed. Oklahoma is a 9 seed. I would have loved to see Rutgers versus West Virginia. Rutgers was an 11th seed. West Virginia was number 6 seed. It would have been an interesting game to watch Indiana versus USC in the East. USC was number 7 seed, and Indiana was number 10th seed. I would have loved to have seen Xavier versus Iowa in that game. San Diego State got a second seed, according to this bracket. I would have liked to see them against East Washington. In the west part of the brackets. In the South, I would have loved to have seen UC Irvine. I had a chance to see them against number 3, Maryland. LSU versus Providence. Because Providence is coming on. Northern Kentucky, just for giggles, against Florida State, that number 15 seed against the number 2 seed. I wouldn't put it past in this tournament ice if a number 16 seed would have knocked off a number 1 seed. Because, you know, you have Winthrop and Dayton. Not saying that Dayton is not tough, but I would see that scare of the 16th seed being the number 1 seed, like we saw a couple of years ago. That was something that I was really kind of looking forward to, with the first four, which Wichita State versus Richmond, UCLA versus Stanford, which is kind of like a conference setup in the West. North Carolina Central versus Robert Morris, and then you have Prairie View versus Siena. I would just like to see who would have played in and got that last 16th or 15th seed to kind of play their way in, and if they were hot, if they could continue to be hot afterwards. But I was talking to our boy Chris Ball, and he was kind of rooting for Dayton, because he texted me and he was like, "Man, the tournament's not gonna happen." And I was like, "Were you gonna be rolling with Dayton?" He's like, "Yeah, you know I was rolling with Dayton." And I sent him the show last week, and he's like, "Well, I think ICE is wrong. I think they." But I got to see the game against Kansas and Dayton earlier in the season. One hell of a game. That is a game that I saw. I had to kind of look at it again. And Azubuike and Toppin were going at it, and it was an overtime game. Of course, Kansas won, but Dayton, I remember saying on the show, gave them everything that they wanted. It would have been great to see Azubuike and Dotson, how they would have fared in the tournament. And maybe Kansas was probably the overall, and maybe they would have, according to this bracket, kind of done some damage to get to the Final Four. Because I'm looking at their bracket, and I can't see anybody that really was a test for them going into the Final Four. I really can't. I can see West Virginia, Michigan State coming out of the East and maybe giving Dayton a run for their money. I could have saw Gonzaga. It would have been tough beating the Penn State team, tough beating Seton Hall team once they got their act together. It would have been real tough for anybody, to me, to beat Virginia the way they were playing coming down the stretch. Ohio State, I wouldn't put it past them to get to the Sweet 16, but there was some and Florida State coming out of there, so it would have been a very competitive tournament with so much parity that it would just be interesting just to watch the games to see how it played out. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Send a note to Chris for me. Just a little note to Chris.
Tell him
it's all love and tell him quit getting out of those dating feelings. You know, being close to the situation. Sometimes you got to be realistic. I've been watching Dayton Flower basketball for a long time. And they had a very good team, but if we were to look at that bracket out east, as you just mentioned, some of the teams they would have faced that maybe come out of there, the fifth seed would have been Auburn. The fourth seed would have been Louisville. The number three seed would have been Michigan State, according to this bracket. And the number two seed would have been Villanova. That's a lot to overcome. And I think the size would have caused Dayton some major problems. Not saying they couldn't beat a few of those teams, but I think the size and the know-how and the experience would have hurt them. Again, Villanova, Michigan State, Louisville, Auburn, I think one of those teams would have stopped the run of Dayton. And I think the biggest problem for Dayton, truthfully, and it's not to say they're not a good team, hell of a team. They did all they're supposed to do, winning their games in their conference. I think the biggest issue for me is having the pressure of being in uncharted waters as the number one seed, where everybody expects you to rise up and be and show what you did all season long. And it's not their fault they didn't play that level or caliber of talent all the time. But that number one seed, I think that monkey would have been on their back and might have been too hard to hold to advance.
Yeah, I think that East was the toughest to me, looking at it, is the toughest one to get out of. It was the toughest. You had Auburn, Louisville, West Virginia, Michigan State. You had Villanova. You had St. Mary's. Don't sleep on St. Mary's. You could Liberty was a good team. I wasn't joking last week. Liberty could upset upset you. They were balling at the end. Rutgers could
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma
too.
Could upset you.
We should bring Chris on and debate this.
I'll contact him next week and see if he's up for doing that. But that was like the toughest bracket to me to get out of. Mm-hmm. Kansas, to me, easy. Easy up until Kentucky. If they had to go against Kentucky, that would have been a battle. If they played either I think that would have been the only kind of competition that they would have had in that if they had to play. And Duke, of course, playing Duke. Baylor, they were shaky, so they could get got by Virginia or Maryland or Providence or Florida State. So that was a tough bracket. So I would put the East first, the South second, and then it's a toss-up between the East and the Midwest on that one. But, yeah, definitely you have to bring him on to talk about these brackets. Anything else before we get off of basketball, get into some boxing?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on point. When you look at Baylor, the other team out of the South, I think, would have caused some damage if they could have played together. Two teams would have been Virginia, okay, and Butler.
Yeah.
But Butler was, man. I like their coach. I like the way that they play. They kind of play below the radar, and they play hard. And they're able to beat a lot of teams in the past just with the way that their talent is put together and the way that they play defense. So, it could have been quite intriguing. Again, I think it would have been a number of upsets that a lot of, like I said, crying one day and ecstatic the next. But it would have been a wonderful tournament. And I wish they would just simulate it. Somebody put this bracket together and let's see what the computers say.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about that offline and see if we can come up with something. Just for giggles, man, just for giggles. Let's see who the best team would have won if we simulated a little bit. Let's go to boxing real quick, man. Roger Mayweather passed away at 58. Now, you talked to me about this a couple of weeks ago and saying that he had diabetes and I think he might have lost his sight and he passed away. This has been a difficult time for the Mayweathers because the mother of Floyd Mayweather Jr., mother of his children, was shot outside her house a week before, and now, you know, his uncle passes away. I know you gave a wonderful, wonderful sort of tribute on the first 40. But talk about Roger Mayweather, man, because I know I remember him fighting back in the day, and he's just always a tough fighter. And you speak of it so eloquently. I got to give it over to you to talk about Roger Mayweather.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Roger Mayweather is part of the famous Mayweather boxing family. There was Floyd Mayweather Sr., who was kind of the architect, the first guy to kind of get it started for them. And then Roger followed in his footsteps. They had another brother, Jeff Mayweather, that was a champion as well. And then Floyd Jr., Floyd Money, came after everyone like that. But Roger himself, before we knew him as a trainer, one was a two-time champion. He was 59-13 at 35 KOs. He had a nickname. He was known as the original Black Mamba,
mm-hmm.
or AKA the Mexican Assassin, because Mexican boxers are known for their strengths and their courage and their nonstop attack approach. And he was able to disassemble a number of Mexicans, which is why they called him the Mexican Assassin. In fact, he used to wear sometimes a sombrero into the ring to kind of show people what was going on. He fought some tough guys, too. Livingstone Brando, Vinny Pazienza, the Paz Man. He fought Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. twice. Fought Pernell Whitaker. So just guys like that were really tough guys. And he did well. But then the most important thing, like I said, that a lot of people don't understand is that for 12 years, basically about 12, maybe 13 years, he became the trainer for his nephew, Floyd Jr. And that kind of went together because Floyd's father, Floyd Sr., was his trainer for a while. But then there were some issues going on, and Floyd Sr. ended up going to prison for like 5 years. So Roger took over as his trainer. And for 12 years, he was a trainer for Floyd. And that was during the time that Floyd fought guys like Diego Corrales, Carlos Hernandez, Jose Luis Castillo, Arturo Gatti, Zab Judah, Oscar De La Hoya, Ricky Hatton, Shane Mosley, and Miguel Cotto. We watched Floyd Mayweather Jr., Pretty Boy, transform into money right before our eyes. And his uncle was along for the ride and really just made him more of an offensive fighter. And that was the difference. His dad had more of a defensive style. He would do the shoulder roll, showed him how to stay away. But what Roger's spin on it and his ability to what he provided to Floyd Money Mayweather's style was the fact that he was able to have him be more of an offensive fighter. So they oftentimes would wait for an opponent to may start making mistakes in about the fourth round. And then he would always give him, he said, you see what he's doing? Go get his behind. But they always had strategies where he would use it to say, and Floyd was known to say, and this was based on what Roger would bring to the table, he would say, if you make a mistake, I will punish you. So when a guy started to move forward and reach, and slip and make him the wrong move, Floyd had a way of coming up and punishing him. That's before he really started to have brittle hands and messing his hands up. We could really throw his hands, as they say. But that was his line from his uncle. You make a mistake, I will punish you. And at some point, you're going to drop your hands or you're going to relax, and I'm going to punish you. That's what he got from his uncle, Roger Mayweather. And Roger Mayweather had some issues and some troubles in his life. A lot of we heard off the cuff, outside the ring. But after meeting him personally and knowing what's going on, I can't really apologize for that because I didn't know him like that. But when I met him and spent some time with him, he's just like your uncle, Uncle Roger. Just an average guy. He just like everybody else, like a lot of things everybody else did, had fun and was known to be out amongst the people in Las Vegas. And he really was nice and would talk to people despite the fact that he was probably one of the for 12 years he was deemed one of the greatest or one of the best trainers with his nephew. And regardless why other people were in the VIP section, Roger's in the casino, talking shop, having fun, talking to people, because that's who he was. And that's hard to find in this world. That's who he was. Wasn't perfect, but he's perfect for some. Uncle Roger, rest in peace, brother.
Yeah, rest in peace. It was a very interesting, man, that between the two sides, between his uncle and his dad, man, turned out to a damn near perfect fighter, and Floyd Mayweather Jr. And him kind of, their experience in the ring shaped and molded one of the best champions out there who remains undefeated. Say what you want about Floyd Mayweather Jr., but he remained undefeated, and nobody can crack the code. And so with the combination of those two created Floyd Mayweather Jr. and one of the best. I had a chance over this time, not watching sports, watching some of the older fights of Floyd Mayweather Jr. and some of the battles that he came through. And, wow, just seeing the influence of Roger and Floyd Mayweather Sr., the seasoned trainers that were able to produce what they produced. We shouldn't sneeze at that. And I think you said it great in the first 40. That, you know, they were good fighters, but they were a hell of a train. Both of them were a hell of a trainer. And despite, you know, some of the bumpy roads that I think Floyd Sr. and Jr. had, you can't deny that he picked up a lot from both of these fighters. But rest in heaven, man. 58 is, to me, too young to pass away. We have another fight looming, which I wasn't looking forward to this, Canelo and Triple G 3. And how are they going to cheat him out of this one, Ice? I was speaking of Triple G, because I think he won the first two fights. So they're doing this again. And to me, it's like Canelo is fighting folks that people really don't know and people don't really care. But this is a fight that people are going to drop down their money and say, I want to see this again. Your thoughts about this fight?
Yeah, well, I think what people were coming to the realization, and maybe Canelo is too, is that people are tired of, as you mentioned, watching them fight guys nobody really knows, particularly unless you are an avid boxing fan. So some of these guys are coming from across the pond, and even though they may be undefeated or lost only once or twice, they don't draw. And I think that's what they're running into. Plus, too, they know Canelo knows, along with as Oscar De La Hoya, his promoter, that that's the money fight. He doesn't want to fight anybody. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to fight Charlo. He doesn't want to fight Demetrius Andre, which could cause him some issues or some problems. So instead, if you don't want to do that, the only fight that you really are going to gather some attention and make people watch and want to attend as well is Triple G. But you notice, too, what they're doing, in my opinion, just my opinion. They literally have waited for Triple G to get older. He's not the same fighter. Not
right.
Saying he won't be ready,
right.
But they have, to me, they have waited to say, okay, we think now it's a lot easier. I think they always, in the back of their mind, thought they would make the third fight, but they made him wait. And I think part of his skills has diminished. So, again, I'll say this once and I get off of it. I'm not sure if our folks are familiar with Manny Pacquiao and Juan Manuel Marquez, who fought five times. And they fought
right.
So many times that Marquez did everything he could to fight Pacquiao, thinking he won a couple of those fights. But we came to the realization that there's no way he could get a decision over Pacquiao. I think the same thing is clear here. And if Canelo is to lose, or Gennady Golovkin, a.k.a. Triple G, wants to win this fight, the third fight, he's going to have to knock him out. Because they said no one except for Floyd Mayweather gets a decision over Canelo in Las Vegas.
Yeah, and I remember that Marquez fight versus Pacquiao, the way he timed that punch to knock Pacquiao out was a masterpiece. I mean, fighting him that many times, kind of knowing how Pacquiao was going to move and where he was going to be when he threw that punch, put Pacquiao to sleep. And I think Triple G is going to have to do that. I think he's going to have to once and for all know that I'm not going to get a decision here. You know, I was robbed two times. Maybe that's the fuel he needs to go in there and just put Carnelo down, because Carnelo for the last two or three years after the meat situation, the quote-unquote tainted meat, he's kind of lost his favor with a lot of his fans that I've talked to personally who's like, I'm not worried about Carnelo. He can do – he's not the fighter that I thought he was. Maybe he was cheating all that time. So he lost a lot of credibility. He moved up in weight because he's a big guy. He's a big guy and was fighting in a lower weight. I don't think him he continued to fight at the weight when he fought Mayweather and all that. He didn't want any of this that smoke from some of the young guys that were coming, and so he started moving up. He didn't want smoke from the Charlo brothers. He didn't want smoke from a lot of folks. So to me, he's avoiding those guys. So taking Triple G again. Maybe trying to get rid of those demons of folks kind of really kind of saying, hey, man, you never really won those fights, and maybe trying to put that to bed. But I think you're right. Triple G has to knock him out this fight. He cannot let it go to the judges because he's going to get robbed again, in my opinion. He's going to get robbed again. Let's go to questions from the goons, man. Any questions that you have that we need to talk about on this show?
Yeah, I want to know how you survived, brother. I mean, first you say you didn't, you boycotted football 1 year. Now you said you were back, and I want to know how you survived, because I think you finally admitted that you were a bigger sports fan, and you're a man of the world. You're a man of your intellect, but I think you finally came to grips with missing sports now that it was taken away from you. So I want to hear about that a little bit, brother. I know that was a little loaded question, a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the man of I appreciate that. But I've been watching this series called Alternative Carbon, which is really good sci-fi action. Really good on Netflix. Been listening to music. I got to get prepared for my job as far as giving the students what they need to finish the semester. So I've been working on that a little bit. Been working out, been training, doing some training. You know what I do. I'm not going to mention it on the show. But, yeah, man. yeah, just trying to keep busy, keep my mind occupied, and trying to get enough rest because, you know, when you're ripping and running, you don't get enough rest. And now there's time to kind of sit back and relax and rest a little bit, which I never really took advantage of, but I'm going to take advantage of this time to rest, to eat right, to stay healthy, and to keep up on the writing that I do, making sure that I'm putting some time aside to write and some of the creative projects that I'm working on. I know a project we're going to be working on pretty soon. Just listening to music and getting my mind right for this, trying to stay positive, because it's very easy to be negative in these times where so many things are happening and you feel like you don't have any control of it, but you have control of yourself. And so trying to keep positive, trying to stay as fit as possible so that the immune system's up, my mind's right. If it's time to move and do anything, I'm ready for it. So, you know, it's giving you a lot of time to think. But I have to admit that, you know, this my body, it's almost like my body was used to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday watching college basketball, because that's what we do in March forever. And it made me think about, and I'm going to throw this question to you next, the first national championship game that you can remember, or the best one you can remember. But I know you talked about a little bit of what you're doing. I'll give you time to respond before I ask my question.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, he says just trying to get, like, put you on that mental point, trying to get some things going, really jumping into this, what I call a marketing side hustle, trying to get back on that. Mm-hmm. I'm also trying to, that book I said was supposed to be working this way together on 2020. So working on that. And then just trying to get my mind right from a mental standpoint to be ready and be thankful for what I have. because you can always be in a law or be in a bad position, but you forget to give thanks for what you're blessed with. And even great people that are around you, like yourself and, you know, my brothers and other people that I come in contact with, and I appreciate them for all the support. You can't take stuff for granted, even when you're in a so-called moment of crisis.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I was watching TV, and I thought about this question. I know I wanted to ask you. What was the maybe the first national championship game that you witnessed that really kind of hooked you into March Madness?
Wow. I think there was a season that kind of got me going. I didn't know who they were because it was crazy. It wasn't so much the game, but it was their run. And it was Marquette, where Al McGuire was the coach. And he had a guy by the name of Butch Lee in North Carolina and Phil Ford back in the day. But the game that really cemented this for me, that made me want to watch March Madness, because I found out about this other guy for a long time, was to watch Larry Bird at Indiana State. I found out about him early on. I saw his first game on national TV before cable, before three-point line. I saw him on TV, and I was amazed. And he started to make that move with Indiana State till they got the Magic, and Larry Bird was taking down all kind of people. They beat Arkansas with the triplets, with Sidney Moncrief. They beat DePaul. They beat so many great teams. But then when he got the Magic, he just did not have enough. So that I think it was 1979, Michigan State versus Indiana State, plugged me in for basketball for a very long time.
All right. Mine was the national championship game, 82, with North Carolina and Georgetown. That sealed the deal for me because I've seen games before, but that was the first game that I watched it from beginning to end. And I'll never forget it because I was living with my grandmother at the time, my mom's mom, and the TV was it was her room, and she had two doors, one that went out to the living room, one that went out to a hall to the bathroom. And I remember having the TV on and watching that game, and I'm on the East Coast, so that game lasted up until almost like 11:30, midnight or something like that. And watching Michael Jordan, because I became a big North Carolina fan at that particular point, and me watching Michael Jordan hit that shot, and then the suspenseful moment when, I can't recall his name right now, but I can see his face vividly, who threw the ball to James Worthy.
Freddie Brown,
who threw the ball, kind of saw somebody pass his eyesight and then threw the ball to James Worthy, and him dribbling down the court, getting fouled, and Georgetown trying to win. It was like, and I remember yelling, and my grandma was like, "Boy, what's wrong with you? What's going on?" And I'm like, "The Tar Heels just won the national championship. Boy, turn that TV off and go to bed." But it was like from that day on, I was hooked on March Madness. Now, I've seen other tournament games and college games and all that, but and saw Magic and Bird and all that stuff. But that game was the game where I'm like, okay, I'm all in at this one. All right. We got less than a minute and 30 seconds left. Any last-second shots?
Yeah, last-second shot. Just really to everyone out there that's listening, I know times are tough and this world is crazy. We're in the midst of some madness, man. But just be thankful for what you have, brother. You're still here, or sister. You're here. You have great people around you. Hopefully you do. And if nothing else, hopefully we're bringing you a little entertainment to make you smile and laugh. We crazy as hell, but it's all about you guys. So God bless you, man, and keep your head up. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's very important to me and to us that have compassion to help each other out in these moments. So if you know people who need things, help them out. Help them out. Don't be so fearful that you lose your compassion. And I echo everything that Ice just said. We will keep entertaining you. Stay tuned. We will see you next week. Take care.